Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Pony Stampede podcast. I am your host, Jordan Hoffeditz. This is a Mustang Monday coming off the loss to TCU over the weekend, 42-34. I think the biggest thing is I saw a little bit of it after the Maryland game, but I think the overreaction scale got some extra work Saturday night and into Sunday and a little bit into today as well. Look, the loss wasn't pretty. Certainly the start was frustrating. The finish was definitely frustrating. But I think it's important for people to kind of keep a little bit of perspective here early in the season. Again, it is week four, back-to-back games against Power 5 teams, and as much as SMU is making that push to become a Power 5 program, it is not yet, and that does make a big difference when it comes to recruiting and just the overall quality of players you have on your team. That is not to say that the players SMU has are not good. I think they've done a very good job, obviously, in the portal this past year and have shown ability to work the portal in its favor over the past few years. And there have been some good wins in the high school recruiting scene as well. But at the end of the day, being in a Power 5 conference really helps a team recruit. And that's just kind of the way of the world, and that's part of why SMU is trying to take that next step, because I think you give a couple years of this team having and this staff having a Power 5 conference behind it, and to add that to what this program and SMU and Dallas already have to offer, and I think that tips a lot of scales. But let's get to it. The game, obviously the start not pretty. TCU takes the opening drive, 74 yards, and really did not have too much trouble taking it right down the field. It took five plays, and one of those plays was a stuffed run, and one play was a one-yard pass. So you take the 35-yard run to start the drive. There was a 19-yard run and a 19-yard touchdown, and there you have it. Again, first drives of the game have not been SMU's strong suit. The best one was at Maryland, but even that ended up getting nothing when they went for it on fourth down and didn't get anything. This time it's a nice pass early, and then two plays that go backwards, an incomplete pass, and a punt. Defense settled in, got a stop. Really bright spot, I thought, Nelson Paul. He had a sack and a half on back-to-back plays, teaming up with Elijah Chapman on the second one. Nelson finished with three sacks on the day. The team finished with five. I've got a story up online right now about that and just kind of what that means to this group. Then again, SMU's driving. They're at the TCU 25 when Tanner throws the interception. It's third and nine. It would not have been a first down if Jake Bailey had caught it right there. The interception was made at the 19, so it would have been a six-yard pass. Who knows what happens there, if there's a lot of what-ifs as far as if Bailey you know, is able to catch it and get those three extra yards. If he catches it and it's fourth and three, you know, again, fourth and three from the 19, do you go for it after they just had scored a touchdown? Do you take points? If it's just incomplete, do you kick the field goal? A lot of what ifs there. Unfortunately, the interception leads to another touchdown, and it's 14-0 kind of right off the bat. Here's where I think this SMU team showed some really good fight. Interception goes for then a touchdown, obviously. So SMU gets the ball back, and they just kind of start chipping away yard-wise, which is kind of what you say you have to do against a Joe Gillespie defense. Obviously, there are two. Rashee Rice draws a couple of defensive pass interference calls on fourth and goal from the one. They go for the touchdown, and Siggers takes it in. I think then, obviously, the first really deflating thing, the interception's deflating, but no points came. You know, the game kind of, it was still early, and you still kind of felt like there was a feeling out process. I think the biggest thing was after the touchdown, you get momentum. It's 14-7. You get a feeling like you might be getting back in the game. And then there's a 57-yard kickoff return into SMU territory. TCU needs just four plays to go the 43 yards they need for the touchdown. I don't think it's an overreaction to say that the kick coverage has not been good to borderline bad. I think you see it on the opening kickoff. It's 7 or 8 yards deep. TCU brings it out. Now, they only get to the 26, which is a plus one as if they took the touchback as opposed to getting it at the 25. But I think that more sends a message that we see something that you guys do poorly here, and we're not afraid to take a little risk to take an advantage of that thing that you do not do well. You then see SMU try some different things with some squib kicks, some high kicks, and some different things there. But I think even maybe more so than that first interception, the kick return and then just a quick, you know, four play, less than 50-yard drive to go back up by two hurts. You then have SMU punting, and then you have the 80-yard little flip play. You know, there are a lot of things to say about that. I know that was one of the punts that maybe could have been downed near the goal line. I'm not sure that that's as big of a advantage or momentum swing as anything else. I think anytime you give up a one-play touchdown drive, I don't care where it started from. That's the bigger issue to me on that. And then you get some fight from SMU to keep themselves in it, be down only 28-14 at halftime. Again, you know, TCU had almost 2 minutes when they got the ball back after the Rashee Rice touchdown that made it 28-14, and they started from the 32. I mean, that's a situation where they could have at least gotten into field goal range or done something, but you get the Jalen Samuel, Paul Nelson sack combo on 3rd and 14. Of course, they end up taking the timeout to just throw the ball away. But that was big to then only be down two scores at halftime and kind of recovered a little bit. Again, not a great series offensively coming out of the second half. That's something that if the other team gets the ball first in the game, you've got to find a way. They did defensively in the first half. They scored, and then they got a stop. And then, you know, just not able to do anything with then that first possession of the second half. I will give them a little bit of an asterisk there. I still think that the illegal motion penalty that negated the 10-yard pass play to Trey was crap. I think it was a bad call. And then things just kind of went backwards from there, because that drive was going. You had Trey that had the good run on second down, you know, then have the 20-yard pass on third and six. But on second and 10, you're able to get a 10-yard pass that should have been your first down. You know, it becomes a 5-yard penalty. Then it's second and 15. You go backwards 3 yards. You throw an incomplete pass, and you're punting. You know, again, really nice work by the SMU defense. It did not hurt that TCU got a personal foul penalty there in the middle of it. But again, I think that's where you have to give the players and the coaching staff credit, because SMU didn't get those silly after the play doing too much kind of penalties that TCU did pick a couple up. I think the biggest thing that really kind of maybe showed you a lot was then eventually TCU does punt it. It's down at the 2. SMU's down 28-14. It's late-ish in the third quarter, and they're backed up at their own end zone. Trey had a couple nice rushes. You know, he got the ball the first 3 plays and goes 22 yards with it. That gets you, you know, out of the shadow. There was the nice 30-yard pass to Mucci. And then ultimately on 4th and 10, you get the 45-yard pass to Bailey that almost gets in. Trey stuffs it up the middle, and it's a ball game from there. And then it's just back and forth. You know, got the stop immediately, and then it was Tanner's second interception that hurt there. I mean, you're in a position, and granted, yes, it's you're still in your own side of the field, but you're coming off a big pass play again, a 3rd and 11 conversion on a 17-yard pass to Jake Bailey, who just had a monster game. And then it goes away pretty quick in a hurry. Mucci slips in post game. Coach Lashley talked about Mucci making a move to go behind the defender. And then when he kind of saw the ball, that's when he tried to redirect and slipped. Might not have been a great pass. I think if your receiver stays on his feet, he at least does enough that it's not an interception. And even if it is an interception, it's then not a 32-yard return almost back to actually past where SMU's line of scrimmage was, to again set up a short touchdown drive. You know, that really hurt, not just the interception, but then the return. And just TCU being able to flip that on SMU and get back ahead by 2 scores. SMU does do a nice job answering that, getting another touchdown. Obviously, Trey's 3rd of the game. And then I think this was the other one that hurt a little bit. When you get to a point that SMU was, you know, you get the delay of game penalty to start, and then the next play is an 11-yard rush. They convert on 3rd and 3. You then have them go backwards on 1st down. It's 2nd and 13. You're thinking, hey, maybe, you know, we get a stop, we get the ball back, and then they break off a 63-yard touchdown run. The only good thing about that is they took not much time off the clock. I mean, it was less than 3 minutes for that scoring drive. If you're going to give up a scoring drive, have it be like that. SMU comes back. You get the Jake Bailey touchdown. And then you have the 2-point conversion. Again, wasn't a fan of it as it was called. It seemed weird. I understand Lashley's explanation. It makes sense to me. I still don't know that I necessarily agree with it, but if you're going to do something like that, you better have an explanation. It better make sense. I think he had both of those saying, look, in that game, if we get the ball back with a chance to tie and score a touchdown, we're not going to go for the tie in overtime. We're gonna play for the win. So we've got to have a two-point conversion anyway. Might as well do it now. If we get it, then when that touchdown comes, we kick the extra point and win the game. If we don't, then you get the second chance at it to tie the game and go to overtime. It's not awful thinking. It's an interesting choice. You can agree or disagree with it on either side of that, and I think there's probably plenty of that to go around. I certainly got two or three text messages about why in the world are they doing it. I didn't have a good answer for them then. I had a slightly better one after Lashley's press conference, which I think you can swallow. But man, the ending was tough. You know, coming off that touchdown, there's barely over a minute. You felt like if SMU could just get the ball back, you know, the offense had kind of been clicking. The Mordecai Bailey connection was doing a lot of good. They had gotten Corrales involved. You know, they were kind of doing some things. This offense is built for big plays, so you felt like if they could get the ball back in a one-score game, backs against the wall, that they might be able to claw their way out. Defense does what you need them to do. Stop after 1 yard, stop after 3 yards, timeouts after both. And then, man, TCU just hands it on a platter with trying that little inside toss. I'm still not entirely sure what happened there. I think the receiver maybe got there early, or it slipped on Max. I'm not really sure, but either way, ball hit the turf and ended up being an incomplete pass. Saved SMU its last time out. They're punting with 40 seconds left, is when SMU would have gotten the ball when the ball was down, with 42 seconds left. 42 seconds in a timeout in college football is a lot, especially for an offense that plays fast. Unfortunately, you have the leaping personal foul penalty, and the offense never gets back on the field. I am going to get into some of your guys' reaction to this, my reaction to it, and a very, very brief, very brief look at UCF when we return. This is the Pony Stampede Podcast. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to the Pony Stampede Podcast. Again, I am your host, Jordan Hofditz. This is a Mustang Monday where we're kind of recapping the TCU game, getting into some overreactions, and a brief look at UCF. Let's look at overreaction number one. The special teams are terrible. I'm just going to... The biggest thing I'm fighting on this is lumping all of special teams together. Colin Rogers has been very, very good as a true freshman, kicking extra points and field goals. And I always butcher his name, so I'm sorry to Ryan, but Gruchevsky has been a solid punter. You know, he gives you some hang time. He certainly gives you distance. He gives you a chance to down those punts inside the 20. I know that really didn't happen. There was one that I think SMU really had a shot to. The other one, I'm not so sure. And he still had, of the four punts, one of them was downed inside the 20. So I think you kind of have to take that. But kickoff coverage has been bad. Hall, it seemed like the UNT game, he was just blasting them through the end zone. I was on the field for some of that game, especially at the beginning and at the end. I don't remember the wind being a major factor in it. I could be wrong. That was a few weeks ago. There's been a lot of football and craziness since then. But since kind of in, as it's gone, it seems like teams are picking up that the SMU coverage might not be great. So even when he does kick it, you know, I mean, kickoffs that go anywhere from 5 to 10 yards deep in the end zone really shouldn't be returned, especially with getting the ball at the 25 these days. So the fact that teams are returning that signals that they've seen something. You know, when they did it on the first one, they only got that net one, but obviously then had the really big return that set up a very short field to go back up 21-7. So I'll give that, but I don't know. And I don't think punt coverage has been bad either. There haven't really been many returns. I feel like it's mostly been fair catches or the ball being downed or the couple touchbacks. But I don't remember seeing anybody break one off of a punt on this group. So I'm not ready to throw all the special teams under the bus. I do think there needs to be, whether it's a personnel shift, whether it's a different approach, there has to be something on kickoff coverage, because if teams continue to see this, they will continue to take advantage of it. And even if, like in this game, even if it only gives them one time with a really short field and they score a touchdown off of that, that's one touchdown that maybe you didn't have to give up, but you did because of kickoff coverage. So I'm starting with that one because I certainly see where some of it's coming from. Not ready to throw them all under the bus just yet. Second is putting Preston Stone in for Tanner Mordecai. Look, I now that the season started, our access is ridiculously limited. It's 20 minutes at the start of two practices, and there's not a whole lot that goes on during those 20 minutes to really see or find out or know too much. I will say there seemed to be a little bit of a gap in the spring between Tanner and Preston. That gap got pretty significant in mine and a lot of our eyes that were watching it in fall camp. And look, at the end of the day, coaches want to win. I'm sure the relationship between all of them is good, coaches, players, all of that. But look, if Preston Stone could win either one of these last two football games, in the coach's eyes, Preston Stone is in the game to win these football games. You know, they're, it's not NFL where you've got an owner or GM saying, no, we're paying this guy $14 million, we're paying this guy $2 million to be his backup, we're playing the starter. I know they're NIL deals now, but that's just not the case. I don't think that was really ever a possibility. I think the fact that Tanner took a really hard hit, was out for a play, and then was right back in says something. I think Lashley talking about how hard of a hit that was that Mordecai took and how much he really felt it in the post game. And we still didn't see Preston, I think, says a lot. I don't know if it's protecting Preston to not put him in bad situations. You know, I don't know. I'm not in the room. They aren't asking my opinion. I think wanting to bench Tanner and go with Preston the rest of the way is definitely an overreaction. you know, and a couple of you said not even necessarily that, but just give them a series, see if there's a change up that can do something there. Again, I can see at times where that can work and that can be effective. I'm not sure against TCU's defense or even Maryland's defense last week. Those are really the times to do it, just based on who you're playing there. Overreaction number three that I might be spearheading a little bit is worries about the run game. I know TCU's defense is not easy to run against. I know some of the yards that they gave up to Colorado in the run game in the opener were kind of due to what that game was. But still, 104 yards rushing on 37 attempts. I mean, it's an under three average. And yes, there were some sacks in there. I know that those go in there. But even when you talk about your individual runners, you know, I'm not saying they aren't running hard. I just, there's a disconnect somewhere in who's running the ball, the run blocking, and the play calling. And something kind of has to be found there. I've really liked what I've seen from Velton Gardner. I think he and Trey Siggers are your 1-2 right now. We'll have to see this week. I don't remember seeing TJ McDaniel on the field at all this past week. He certainly didn't get on the stat sheet. And Kamar Wheaton still just isn't quite there. I know that's frustrating. I know, you know, when you get a guy like that, you know, kind of like how a lot of you feel with Preston Stone. You know, you get a guy like that and you want to see what he can do out there. You want to turn him loose. You want to get those results right away. I think you've got to be a little patient with both of them, especially when there are more than capable guys ahead of them right now who are in better positions to make things happen to win. That being said, in order to win, you have to be able to run the ball for more than 104 yards at a better than 2.8 yard average. And that's just the way it is. And unfortunately, that's been a little bit of a question mark. You know, I mean, Velton averages, you know, 4.3 yards a carry. Trey gets at 3.2. Against a Joe Gillespie defense, that's not bad. But still, there just has to be a little something more in the run game. And whether that's, you know, really defining, here's our one, here's our two, which maybe they did this last week with Trey having 19 carries, Velton having 9, Kamar having 2. Nothing from TJ and nothing from Levine. You know, I think that's an establishment in the right direction as far as they're concerned of having a 1-2 punch there. If TJ is if he was held out because he wasn't healthy, obviously him being healthy and getting into the game is a wrinkle that we'll see and we'll maybe, you know, test the coaches to fight, you know, for that fight between those three to find out the top two and really the top one. I think it'd be interesting to see if Velton at some point overtakes Trey for getting the lion's share of the carries at some point. I think he's proven he can handle it. He's obviously a veteran guy that has played against Power 5 defenses in his career, so that might give him an advantage there. And we'll see, you know. And ultimately, the biggest overreaction I've seen is that the results from the last 2 weeks mean that this is a good enough football team that's going to get some mediocre results. You know, woulda, shoulda, coulda, moral victories, one possession losses, don't count for anything. No, I mean, look, moral victories, nobody's playing for moral victories in college football. And certainly not this program anymore. There was a time when SMU would take moral victories left and right, We're past that now. At the same time, losing by one possession at Maryland, losing to them by the same score that they then went to Michigan and lost by, there were quite a few people talking about how the 17-point spread for them against Michigan was way too low, and there's no way they'd even cover that. Well, maybe Maryland is a good football team. You know, maybe Maryland isn't the elite of the Big Ten, but maybe they're a good football team with good players. They're not going to win the Big Ten because there are the elite teams in that conference, named Michigan and Ohio State mostly. But they're going to finish, you know, in the top half of the conference, I feel like. They're going to be in that top part of the middle pack. That's a good football team. The Big 12 is a mess, I think, as demonstrated last week with Texas losing to Tech, Oklahoma losing to Kansas State. You know, who knows what's going to happen any given day in that conference. But again, as much as we might not like to admit it as SMU people, that's not a bad TCU football team. They've got good players. And again, the two-point conversion attempt skews it a little bit. And that was a one-touchdown game. And if this was a bad football team with bad coaches, when the score became 28-7, it all would have snowballed out of control. The score would have ended up being 60-something to 14. SMU would have been flagged for unsportsmanlike conduct penalties left and right for being emotional and playing past the whistle and things like that. And that just didn't happen. And I think that says a lot about this group, both in uniforms and in headsets, that it didn't get out of control, that SMU fought to get right back into the game and fought till the end and pretty much gave themselves a chance at the end. They did also take that chance away from themselves. But those two games aren't going to define the season. They certainly don't have anything to do with what this team can do in conference play. That starts this week, maybe, hurricane permitting. I think everybody just kind of needs to take a step back and take a moment. I mean, I think there were two Lashley quotes from the end of the press conference that I thought stood out. One was, "We said at the beginning of the year that we have 50 new players on this team, and for them to play as hard and as well together as they do is a big deal. We've just got to continue to get better and play better. Playing hard, playing physical, and playing together gives you a chance. We've had chances. We've got to play better to finish some of those games against really good teams, which pretty much every game the rest of the way is like that. We've got to pick ourselves up as we get ready for conference play." I mean, that's a coach who knows what he's got and what this team has done, and knows that it hasn't been good enough these last 2 weeks, knows that moral victories aren't enough, and knows that this team has to be better and will go and work to make this team better. The other one is going back to what I said about, you know, how they handled the game, especially getting down by that much. He said, I do think they handled it, being the emotions, fine. I don't think we had any unsportsmanlike or late hit penalties. It did get a little chippy there. Rivalry games are supposed to. I thought the officials did a good job on both sides of keeping it in check, not letting it get out of control. Down 28-7, I'd say we didn't get too emotional, because if we got emotional, it could have got ugly real quick. Our guys stayed in the moment. They did what we said. They kept playing and got us back in the game. That says a lot, because that means the players have bought in. If you don't buy in, I don't care what your coach is telling you when you're down 28-7, you're not listening. So they've bought in, and then you got to trust the coaches, because what they were saying down 28-7 clearly worked to pull themselves back in the game. It's four games. It's back-to-back games against two of the toughest teams they'll see all season. And I'll say it, they're now going to have a third straight game against one of the toughest teams they'll play all season. And they're playing them in probably the toughest place they'll play all season, where just UCF is ridiculously good at home. But this is where I think you'll see some things. I think even in games that you know, could have expanded the brand or impressed people making decisions about realignment, which I don't think they're taking just one or two games in a season under consideration, let alone just one season under consideration when it comes to realignment. But, you know, these first four games were really about kind of figuring some things out about this team to get ready for conference play. That starts now. Okay, so now are some of the, whether they're true freshmen, the guys that maybe they were getting on kick coverage to get some experience, are they now sitting down for some more experienced guys to fit some lanes better? Somebody commented about that on the TCU reaction post on the Boulevard message board. You know, you'll see those kinds of things start happening now, where guys who were maybe getting some playing time to either just get experience and then redshirt, or, you know, whatever they were doing, if it wasn't working, they're not going to stick with it now. They're going to go with something that they think will work better. Because this is conference play. This team has talked since before spring about winning a conference championship. I know in my time as an SMU student, covering this team for the student newspaper, there certainly were no talks about winning a conference championship then. You know, I was working in Georgia through most of the June Jones years, to know how much that was maybe talked about behind closed doors, but I certainly don't remember, you know, reading stories or seeing posts about players talking about winning a conference title back in those days. So look, this team knows what it wants to do, and that starts now. So I think we can overanalyze the first four games and certainly the last two all we want. This is where it matters. This is what matters. The players know it. The coaches know it. And I think we'll know a lot more about this team after this first conference game. That being said, I will be in Orlando, weather permitting, game permitting, for the game this weekend against the Knights. They are dominant at home. They've lost three times since 2017, and one of those was a close game against Louisville earlier this year. They just don't lose games at home. They really don't lose conference games at home. SMU will try to change that. I've got, like I said earlier in the podcast, got a story about Jake Bailey's massively breakout performance this past weekend, and just kind of what he can mean to this offense moving forward. Have a story about the defense finally getting some, not just pressure to the quarterback, but getting the quarterback down to the ground and picking up some sacks. And then, as always, we meet with the coordinators on Tuesday mornings. Usually get a player or two there. And then Coach Lashley talks, and usually get a player on Wednesday. And I will have stories and or quotes from those days. I'll also have a preview up. I'll reach out to the UCF 24/7 side and see what we can maybe jointly do or help each other out with leading up to this one. I expect things to be a little more civil with that group, more like the Maryland group than the TCU group this past week. And we'll go from there. I should give you another little podcast here midweek, and then hopefully one before the game. Obviously, travel and weather and the game actually happening will dictate a lot of the stuff for the rest of the week. But keep it on PonyStampede.com. Keep up with the message boards. Keep up with the story posts. I will also have a non-football story coming this week. But it's got an interesting angle. I think it'll be a pretty good read. So stick here, like, subscribe. Make sure you get the podcast sent to you when they drop. Make sure you're Pony Stampede 24/7. subscription is up to date because you don't want to miss any of the VIP stories or VIP conversations. And as always, go Mustangs.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.